I have failed often. One notable failure was when a person said to me as their pastor, "I'm going into the hospital for a few days," and I said to them, "I will visit you." And I forgot. How do you think they felt when I said one thing and did another? Like unto it, another failure. At that door many years ago, a woman left the worship service and said, "Do you care about people?" "Yes." "You say you do?" "Yes." "I was in rehab for 7 weeks. You never even called me." How do you think she felt knowing I had said one thing and done another? But then we all know something of this feeling, don't we? In marriage, there is that day when two people come together. It's always a glorious day. Beautiful settings and beautiful words are said. Promises are made. And it's a pinnacle of love and a great celebration. You implicitly being said to the other, "You are the most important person in my life. You are the one among all the people on the earth who I will cherish and treasure," and 10 years goes by. And all of a sudden, people in marriages are saying, "The television, the computer is more important than me. Hobbies and friends, what about me?" How do you think spouses feel when those beautiful words are said, but then they're not done? Or a friend comes to you in a really tough time and says, "Could you possibly lend me a few $100? I'm in a really bad place. I'll pay you back." And generously, you loan them the money, and they never pay you back. How do you think people feel when a dear friend says one thing and does something else? Or people bring a precious child for baptism. They say those powerful words of faith and commitment, including, "I will keep my child under the ministry and the guidance of the church and raise them up in the faith. I will do that standing before God." And then we often will never see them again. How do you think pastors feel when people say one thing and do something else? But then we're all Christians, and whether through baptism or church membership, when you take membership vows of commitment to support the church with your prayers, your presence, your gifts, your service, and your witness, we say those things, and then all the other things become more important. Oh, we wear our crosses, and we say we're a Christian to the world, but we don't act it. How do you think God feels when we say one thing about our faith? When we sing with joy, "Here I am, Lord, send me." And then everything else just seems to be more important. How do you think God feels when we say one thing and do another? Serious stuff. And today, as we conclude our sermon series on restored, finding our way back to a right spirit and a right life of Christian discipleship, we think about how it is that once we find ourselves in those wandering places, how do we get back? How do we become Christians who more and more do what we say we will do? Live what we say we believe. And we think about that today, concluding this important sermon series and Lenten study that many of you have participated in. You might say we're trying to offer today a reminder and a method for staying spiritually on track. Because you see, there is a force in life that naturally moves us in all areas of life away from where we want to be. It's called, under the principle of thermodynamics, which I have no idea what that is really, it's called entropy. Anybody here know about entropy? Yeah. Entropy is the principle of life that scientists have deduced that says that there is a natural tendency for things to go from one state to a lesser state and a lesser state, for energy to go from a strong expression to a weaker expression. And a great example is a campfire. So you start a campfire, you put the wood on the fire, you light it up, whoosh, right? Blazing fire. What happens? After the blaze, it comes down. And when it's all over, what do you have left? But ashes. An example of entropy. Another example of entropy, I think, is what happens on January 1st when you start a diet, and on January 30th, you can't even remember you were on a diet. Entropy. There seems to be a natural tendency, as scientists have said, for things to go from a high energy to a lesser energy. And I'm probably not saying that well for you scientists here, but bear with me. And spiritually, it applies also. There is, it seems, a natural entropy that invades our spiritual life so that people can and often will stand at the altar and make promises, whether in marriage, whether for baptism, whether for confirmation or membership or other commitments to Christ, and then they fade. They lose energy. And one of the ways that God has addressed this is that God has created the Sabbath day as a regular time for us to recharge our spiritual batteries. That's why it's so important for us to be here. And I can tell you this, when people share with me honestly that their spiritual energy has diminished, and often they'll fade away and sometimes wander from the church. You know when it all begins? When they stop being in the presence of the Christian community in worship. Entropy often begins when we step away from worship. And God's designed worship for the Sabbath day, for that recharging, so that entropy doesn't take over. But early in the church, this was a reality too. So today we celebrate Jesus' triumphal entrance into Jerusalem. What energy, what a high point, what a blazing fire, right? And yet, it took only 30 years after the resurrection of Jesus Christ for Paul, the Apostle Paul, to have to write to the churches letters of encouragement because entropy was happening there. They were losing their spiritual fervor, as often happens. And so he writes to the church in Colossae. And when he writes there, he's giving them counsel on what to do to keep this spiritual entropy from happening. Or he's giving them guidance on how to stay engaged in the Christian journey. And I love the image he used, and he uses it elsewhere in the scriptures. He talks about spiritual clothing. He says, put on. So as we think about this, think about how you get dressed for the day. And spiritually, Paul would say, we put on these things. And I want to talk about just three right now out of the several he mentions in this letter to the Colossians. He talks about putting on tender-hearted mercy. Now, another version, for those of you who might take note, another version, the one we more often use, the New International Version, says compassion. But when I heard that the New Living Translation said tender-hearted mercy, I thought that's what we're talking about. You see, mercy. Mercy is the quality of coming to the aid of another person. That's why we call nurses angels of mercy. And so Paul says, put on mercy. To stay engaged in your faith, put on mercy, tender-hearted mercy. He says, put on kindness, a second of the several things that we lift up today. Put on kindness. Kindness means to help another person to be caring about their concerns. And then put on love. And it's agape love. It's the love of God. So he's saying, love other people the way God would love them. Put on mercy, kindness, and love if you want to stay engaged and keep your faith strong and vital and growing. Put those things on. The church exists by God's design to help us do those things. The church comes together, certainly to worship, but then to help people find ways to put these things into practice. Mercy, kindness, and love. And the design of the church and this congregation, as we have developed what we believe is God's will for us here, gives people opportunities and ever more opportunities to do that, inviting people to stay spiritually engaged by doing these things, doing the things of Christ. And a lot of people pay attention and know that we do some big things. We send teams to Haiti, to Peru, to the Dominican Republic. People go for a week and give a lot of time and energy. We have other groups going locally. We'll be sending 27th and 8th graders to Philadelphia in 2 weeks to serve the homeless. We send young people to Washington, D.C. We'll send a team to Appalachia next summer for a week. Bigger things that get more attention, perhaps. But hear this. Every one of us, to keep spiritually engaged, can participate in being kind, in being merciful, and in being loving. And the church gives you opportunities every day. And I want to share some of them with you, because you need to know that these little things that often you don't hear about are ways that people within our congregation, and some of you are here right now, how people stay spiritually engaged, fight off that spiritual entropy or loss of enthusiasm or energy, and engage themselves using their time and their talents and their gifts. So listen and consider this. In the past 2 weeks, these following items, just in the last 2 weeks, our confirmation class, who will stand here and affirm their faith in just several weeks, some of our confirmation class kids with outstanding leaders put together Easter baskets that will be given out to underprivileged or needy children, families that can't afford to perhaps have a joyful Easter for their children. And our young people know exactly why they did it and how it is that they're using their skills and gifts, just putting together a basket in order to love and serve and to be kind. A family in our church took their 3 children and visited a senior citizen couple. Elle and Lib are now no longer able to get out of their house. Wasn't that long ago that they were sitting among us, but now the aging process has kept them home. So this family with 3 little children went and visited, showing such kindness. One of our men just recently helped the Habitat for Humanity project, one of our partners in service to the community, simply using their skills with a hammer. Yesterday, during our cleanup day, a 9-year-old boy, now he may not have known and said, well, I'm fighting off spiritual entropy. In fact, he may have just been doing what his mom or dad said. Actually, he was with grandpa. But he was here moving some mulch. And he'll put words and ideas to why he did that. But we were teaching him how to be kind in serving others so that this place could look beautiful. Another man yesterday, in such a simple way, served all of us. He was kind to all of us. He walked throughout our parking lots with one of those metal rollers picking up nails so you don't get flat tires in the parking lot. Thank you, Jeff, because I had gotten a flat tire not long ago. Or our senior citizen women in the Martha Circle, where I did a program last Monday for 20 ladies and invited them to write care notes to people who are sick, who are sad, who are grieving, notes of support and care. And this next picture shows you that one of those people writing the notes is 100 years old. The next one, Laval. The next one shows on the left, Ruth Forrest. She is 100 years old. She is still serving. She is still staying spiritually engaged, using the ability simply to write a note at 100 years of age. And I expect her to be in the pew sitting right over there at our next service. Two weeks ago, 15 people came on campus on and off and made food and sat with and talked with and befriended the homeless in this county in the Interfaith Hospitality Network. Others took time to prepare our community garden in the back, where this coming summer, we hope, as last summer, 2,000 helpings of food will grow and go to the Lord's pantry to be given to those in need. We're thankful for those who planted flowers as you came in and beautified our campus, being kind and loving simply by helping beautify the house of God. Or folks who yesterday, seven people went on the hunger van to Newark, where they gave out 100 meals to the homeless on the streets. I read a story about that this morning, and I cried. Because of what happened yesterday to one person in that interaction with a homeless person. Kindness, tender-hearted mercy, and love. One person in our congregation has the ability to make pillows. So when the thrift shop gets used pillows, they're donated, but we really can't resell them. She takes them. She breaks them apart, takes the stuffing. Every month, she comes back with 24 new pillows that we can sell, and then that money continues to go into the mission and ministry of the church. And yet another person has been taking clothing that we can't sell, stained things that are just not sellable, and been turning them into stuffing for sleeping bags for the homeless. You never hear about this, but people are being kind and loving and tender-hearted and showing mercy. Or one family in the church who wants to support the Lord's Pantry food distribution ministry, serving over 1,000 people a month. This family buys mac and cheese, those little boxes, by the caseload. I walked into the house a while back, cases and cases of mac and cheese. There must have been a sale, and they're bringing them down. Who knows about that? But they're being kind and tender-hearted and showing mercy. Many of our children are coming to us more and more and saying, Pastor Frank, they'll tell me, I didn't want any gifts for my friends on my birthday. I wanted them to bring some food for the Lord's pantry. And they bring in bags of food for the Lord's pantry, teaching them, as their parents are, to be kind, tender-hearted, to stay spiritually engaged in that little act of love. More of these stories are sitting in these pews. You, many of you, are doing them. And because you are, you're staying spiritually engaged. You see, the Bible is true. The more you give, the more you receive. So when we give in any of these or other countless ways, we receive that spiritual renewal, that spiritual engagement that Paul wants us to have when he says, be tender-hearted, be kind, be merciful. He's just not talking about a social service project. He's talking about spiritual growth, fighting off the entropy, staying spiritually engaged, and growing in your faith, which is what this life is all about, to keep on growing. And perhaps it's all summarized in one of those great hymns of the church, Lead On, O King Eternal. I've always loved the line. When I sing it, it just sticks in my throat. It says in one of the verses, for not with swords loud clashing, nor roll of stirring drum, but with deeds of love and mercy, the heavenly kingdom comes. Yes, deeds of love and mercy. That's how God's kingdom comes. My friends, when you find yourself feeling spiritually weak, when you find yourself fading from faith, when you're starting to doubt or question, these are ways that you can engage, showing kindness and mercy and love. Because that's the method for spiritually reconnecting. One of my favorite movies is Top Gun. Many of you have seen it. Tom Cruise plays Maverick, that cocky pilot. And I like the scene near the end where Maverick is in the plane. And before this has happened, his co-pilot Goose has died, possibly because of Tom Cruise, Maverick's fault because of his actions. Now he's engaged in a real life battle. There's an air battle going on with the enemy, and they send him up to be a part of it. But he's still haunted by the past. He's still not sure he wants to be a pilot. He's even already tried to quit. He's had entropy, if you will. But he's sent up again. And as he's flying toward the battle, he veers away and he avoids the conflict, the battle. He avoids doing what he was trained to do. And I love that line, and with words I can't say here, on the ground the commander says, Maverick, engage! Engage! Get in the fight! And he can't do it. And he just sits. But finally something clicks. And he engages. And he gets back to where he's supposed to be using his training. and being a part of the battle, and he's back. My friends, when times come in your life that you don't want to engage, that you're not so sure about your faith, when life beats you up or God seems distant, engage. Engage in acts of tender-hearted mercy, of kindness and love, and you will find the spiritual fire will flame again, and you, once again, will be an active follower of Jesus. May that be so always for you.